how could someone abduct not one, but two girls at the same time?
My sister couldn't protect me. There was some boogeyman out there that would take both of us.
There was no explanation. There was very little hope.
Everyone knew about the case of the Lyons sisters.
On March 25th, 1975, 12-year-old Sheila Lyon and her 10-year-old sister Catherine walked from their home to Wheaton Plaza Mall in Montgomery County, Maryland, to see Easter decorations and get a bite to eat. They were never seen again. The disappearance of the Lyon sisters, the daughters of a popular radio broadcaster, shocked the nation's capital and led to a search for answers. The Lyon sisters have never been found, but later this year, a man goes on trial for their murders.
The abduction of Sheila and Catherine Lyon over 40 years ago has haunted this community. We're finally able to start answering the questions of what happened in April of 1975.
But after more than 40 years, investigators still don't have all the answers about how two young girls could be snatched from what was then quiet suburbia. They're still trying to learn who robbed a family of its children and a community of its sense of security. I'm Neil Augenstein. This is The Investigation Continues, an investigative podcast from WTOP. Over the next five episodes, we'll examine the disappearance of Catherine and Sheila Lyon in March of 1975. We'll look at the clues and evidence that investigators pursued, and in some cases missed, as they searched for the two sisters. A search that resulted in an indictment for the Lyon sisters' murders, even though their bodies have never been recovered. A crime that upended a family and brought fear to all who heard the story. A story still in need of a final chapter. About a week after her daughters Sheila and Catherine disappeared, Mary Lyon invited Washington Star reporter Marianne Kuhn into her kitchen. She told her about what had been going on the day her daughters vanished.
Well, they were on Easter vacation, and Mrs. Lyon was drinking coffee, as usual, and the girls had made, just cereal and toast. Mary Lyon, the mother, didn't want the girls to disturb their father, who was sleeping. He was up all night doing a WMAL radio show. So it was decided that the girls would go to nearby Wheaton Plaza.
You'd never met the girls before, right?
No, unfortunately, I never had met them. But from what people told me, you know, they were both blonde-haired, and Kate, the youngest one, was sort of the silly one and the outgoing one, while Sheila, the oldest, was quiet. Well, Sheila was the cook and the honor roll student at Newport Junior High School, an artist, a bowler. She was just starting to take babysitting jobs, and her secret ambition was to be a cheerleader. And Kate liked to garden, play volleyball, roller skate, read books, and run. They shared a bedroom with twin beds. It was quite feminine and beautiful, with yellow walls and pink and white flowers on a vanity. There were posters above each of the girls' beds. Over Sheila's bed was a poster of John Denver, and over Kate's was one of Loggins and Messina. And I remember there was a soft breeze coming through the window, and they had very sheer white curtains that were just stirring a little bit. And I thought how normal and beautiful this was. Sheila was wearing a navy blue sweatshirt and jeans. They were wheat-colored, and tennis shoes. And Kate had on Wrangler blue jeans, a bright, bright gold turtleneck, and a red knit jacket and brown shoes.
And so what was the plan for that afternoon?
Well, Mrs. Lyon had suggested that they go to the Orange Bowl, and that was one of the favorite places for the girls. Kate had complained that a slice of pizza used to be 40 cents, and now it's 45 cents. The girls were given an allowance for doing different chores, and Mrs. Lyon didn't give them any money to go up to the plaza. And they had about $4 to go to spend on pizza and whatever. Sheila and Kate walked out the front door together, and they went down the flagstone path that was there, out the chain link gate, and down a wooded path. on the way to Wheaton Plaza, which was not that far from their home, 10-minute walk.
You wrote that it was really busy at Wheaton Plaza that day since it was Easter and it was a beautiful sunny day. A clerk at Up Against the Wall remembered that the sisters came in and looked around. At another store, Sheila had picked up a leather wallet and showed it to Kate. The Orange Bowl was packed that day. By the end of the day, they'd sold 2,400 slices.
Their older brother, Jay, who was in ninth grade at the time, saw them over by this big Easter bunny display in the center of the plaza. And, you know, he walked past them, and they saw him, he said, but they didn't talk to him.
And it turns out he was one of the last people to see the girls. As you sat there that day with Mary Lyon, did you get the sense that she really believed that her daughters would be coming home?
Yes, I do think they were hopeful. In fact, Mrs. Lyon said that when the girls come home, Kate can get her ears pierced and Sheila can wear eyeshadow, and they'll get their Easter baskets that have been sitting by the fireplace.
16 before 11 o'clock on WMAL. Tom Gager with the four lads on a Wednesday morning in Washington.
Wherever we go.
We owned the city as far as radio went. WMAL was right then in the midst of its salad days of being number one in the market.
Tom Gager was the midday host at WMAL. Sheila and Kate's father, John Lyon, was a popular personality there.
Yeah, 10 before 1 o'clock, John Lyon, here from WMAL. It's almost better than...
He was always very cheerful on the air. John is probably the most flexible broadcaster I've ever known. He could sing, he could entertain, he was a good disc jockey, and he loved to appear with his band. It's called the Gross National Product. I think it was four or five guys, and they did concerts all the time. We were all out in the community all the time.
But that changed after March 25th.
They told us that John's daughters had been kidnapped. That's all we knew.
When word came out that Catherine and Sheila had gone missing, it sucked the air out of not just WMAL radio, but of the entire metro area, especially, of course, Montgomery County.
At the time, Gary Reels was a reporter with WMAL.
This was the first time anything like this happened. And the worst part about it, Neil, was it was so dark. It was so frightening. And there was no explanation for their disappearance. There was very little hope.
What had happened to Kate and Sheila Lyon? 4 hours after their daughters were supposed to be home, the Lyons were getting worried. They called the girls' closest friends and neighbors. Nobody had seen them. John Lyon picked up the kitchen phone and dialed 911. A dispatch went out to car 412 to get a report on two missing persons. Within 10 minutes, two Montgomery County police officers were at the front step of the Lyon home. As soon as the Lyons told him what happened, Officer James Machado said he could tell the Lyon sisters hadn't run away. He told a reporter he tried to soft pedal his concern to console John and Mary Lyon. He told them even good kids are capable of doing strange things.
The first time I heard about it was actually on the radio.
In 1975, WTOP's Chris Corr worked at WMAL with John Lyon, who came on the air the next day.
He had called into the morning show, the Hardin and Weaver show, the most listened to show in Washington, and he was saying, look, I'm sure we're going to feel stupid about this. They probably told us that they were having a sleepover or something, and we just can't remember, but I just, you know, if anybody knows where they are, you know, let us know, send them home. And at that point, I'm sure they were concerned, but they kept thinking, well, obviously we just forgot that they had this sleepover or something like that.
While the Lyon family held out hope, Montgomery County Police realized two young girls, 12-year-old Sheila and 10-year-old Kate Lyon, had disappeared.
There were never any good evidence-based leads in this case. There was never any evidence back at Wheaton Plaza or anywhere between the plaza and the Lyons' home.
You're looking in dumpsters, you're looking at trash cans to see if maybe the child's possessions, glasses, a purse, clothing had been disposed of in that way.
Clint Van Zandt is a retired FBI profiler. He says the first hours after a child disappears are crucial.
When you do an investigation like that, it's almost like a target on a bullseye. You start at that very center of that target. In this case, the mall or where they were last seen allegedly walking down the street, perhaps getting into a car. And then you take that bullseye and you start expanding away from the center of the target. And you move out a few feet and you move out a few hundred yards. And then you move out a mile. Then you move out 2 miles. And you're expanding and expanding. It's just like somebody throws a rock into a pond of water and those ripples start going out. Well, that investigative circles have to start moving out too.
Police knew that several people inside Wheaton Plaza had seen the girls there in the early afternoon. Sometime between 2:30 and 3, a man named James Mann was standing outside his home here near the corner of Drum Avenue and Devon Place, a few blocks from the plaza. He waved to the girls as they walked past and they continued toward McComas Avenue. This was the last confirmed sighting of Sheila and Catherine Lyon. Next time on The Investigation Continues.
Police put out a composite sketch of a man in his 50s trying to coax girls into talking with him into a microphone.
I'm Neil Augenstein. The Investigation Continues is a production of WTOP. You'll find other episodes on WTOP.com, iTunes, and Podcast One. Thanks for joining. We'll see you here next week. Previously on The Investigation Continues.
Sheila and Kate walked out the front door together.
Then they told us that John's daughters had been kidnapped.
You're looking in dumpsters, you're looking at trash cans.
It sucked the air out of the entire metro area.
In March 1975, 12-year-old Sheila Lyon and her 10-year-old sister Catherine vanished after spending a few hours at the Wheaton Plaza Mall in Montgomery County, Maryland. The disappearance of the daughters of a popular local radio personality shocked the area and instilled fear in parents and their children. Now, more than 40 years later, a man will soon go on trial for their murders, even though their bodies have never been recovered.
What happened to Sheila and Catherine Lyon?
I'm Neil Augenstein. This is The Investigation Continues, an investigative podcast from WTOP. The disappearance and search for two young sisters stretched more than four decades. It included dramatic developments and missed opportunities and led to an indictment for their murders. What did happen to the Lyon sisters?
There are several crimes that have happened in our city over the years that have been so impactful, they have changed the way we live. And the disappearance of the Lyon sisters is one of those crimes.
Pat Collins was the reporter in the Washington area in 1975 when 12-year-old Sheila and 10-year-old Catherine Lyon disappeared from the Wheaton Plaza Mall.
The way we lived back in 1975, particularly in suburbia, is that we had these shopping malls. It was a place where teenagers would hang out. It gave teenagers and young people a place they could socialize. Hey, Mom, I'm going to the mall. That's okay, Pat. Just make sure you're home for dinner. The mall was a magnet for young people. It's where you could see the new fashion. Remember records? They actually had records and music stores back then, and you could find out, you know, who was in the top 10. You could, you know, hang out with people, not only from your school, but from other schools. It was a great little melting pot of society for young people. And since there were a lot of kids there, it seemed an okay thing to do. And that's the way a lot of families and a lot of kids lived their lives in the 70s. And parents thought it was safe until that day.
These were two girls together, two sisters, who had just disappeared.
To hear of girls a little bit older than me getting kidnapped, I remember our parents talking to us about it, about not getting into cars with people. I just remember it having a huge effect on me. It was sort of that boogeyman story that we had in that area.
A story that's weighed heavily on people for more than 40 years. Catherine and Sheila Lyon had walked the Wheaton Plaza Mall one afternoon during their Easter vacation in 1975. They never returned home. Montgomery County Police were certain the Lyon sisters hadn't run away. They interviewed family, friends, and people who saw the girls in the mall that afternoon of March 25th.
Darlene is a girl who knew the Lyon sisters, was at Wheaton Plaza the day they disappeared.
Reporter Anna March interviewed the girl, who she called Darlene. Darlene had seen a young man, maybe in his 20s, who'd been leering at the sisters in the mall.
Yeah, she had seen him talking to the girls. I believe the way she phrased it to me was that she had a bad feeling about it. It was creepy. He was too close to them. She didn't say anything to the girls, but she said to him, take a picture, it lasts longer, because he was staring at them. And she said, you know, I knew there was something wrong with him, and I knew he was a creep.
On March 27th, 2 days after the Lyon sisters disappeared, Montgomery County Police asked for Darlene's help in putting together a composite sketch.
They sent a police car for her to bring her in to make the sketch. She lived with her mom, and her mom was at work, and they sent a police car, brought her in. She gave the information. The detective drew the sketch, and that was it. She said it was a pretty easy process for her to give the information.
The sketch showed a white man, about 5'11", 140 pounds, late teens or early 20s. The man had long hair, acne, and scars on his left cheek. But Darlene wasn't the only person who'd seen Kate and Sheila at the mall before they vanished.
Well, there was a 13-year-old teenager who lived near the Lyons, and he was at the mall at the same time Kate and Sheila were there, and he provided Montgomery County Police with a description of a man he saw, 50 to 60 years of age. He saw this man talking to Sheila and Kate.
Washington Star reporter Marianne Kuhn talked with that witness.
Well, we named him Jimmy. It's not his real name, but police wanted to keep his identity a secret, and his parents were fearful of retaliation, and they asked that his real name not be used. He said it was about 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he was out with a friend, and they were near the People's Drugstore in the Orange Bowl pizza carryout, and the two girls were talking to a man with a tape recorder. And he said he heard the man ask a question, are any of you two involved in sports?
Jimmy told her the man was sitting on a ledge in the outdoor portion of Wheaton Plaza talking to the girls.
He said that he thought the man was some kind of a reporter, and he was joking with his friends that maybe they ought to go over there and ask him to interview them.
But the conversation didn't last long.
He said the girls went in one direction, and the man with the tape recorder walked in another direction towards Montgomery Ward's. And the girls were walking the other way toward the fountain.
Jimmy provided a description to the same detective that created the composite based on Darlene's recollections. Soon after, Montgomery County Police made the sketch of Jimmy's suspect public.
Police put out a composite sketch of a man in his 50s.
Reporter Gary Reels.
A man in his 50s, a well-dressed man, a neat-looking man, gray-haired, who apparently, over a period of time in those days around March and April of 75, was seen not just at Wheaton Plaza, but over at Iverson Mall in Prince George's County, trying to coax girls into talking with him into a microphone and apparent cassette recorder that he may have had.
As soon as that sketch was released, police were flooded with calls from people who were sure they'd seen that man in his 50s trying to get girls to speak into his tape recorder.
And very quickly, the composite sketch of tape recorder man became iconic with the investigation. A nice-looking, well-dressed, gray-haired gentleman appearing type of fellow.
But the sketch of the man who Darlene had seen was never made public. It turns out the detective who drew it told his supervisors he didn't think it was a very good likeness and suggested not making it public because it would generate false leads.
She trusted the police. You know, she said she didn't doubt the police along the way. She said, well, they must have their reason. They must know something. They must have some reason to know it was this other guy, the tape recorder man.
Right after the sketch of tape recorder man was made public, a local man told a security guard at Wheaton Plaza he'd been there at the plaza the day the Lyon sisters disappeared. The witness said he saw the girls getting into a car with a man who looked like the composite sketch, and they all drove away. The witness was given a lie detector test, but failed it. Police figured he was just trying to get the $9,000 reward that was out there for help in solving the case. And others were out to profit from the tragedy. People called the Lyon home saying they'd seen the girls. One male caller demanded John Lyon leave a briefcase with $10,000 cash inside the bathroom of an Annapolis, Maryland courthouse. Lyon left the money, but nobody ever picked it up. The man reportedly called the next day and said police had surrounded the courthouse so he couldn't get the money. He said he'd be back in touch, but never contacted the family again. Meanwhile, police and the public continued to look for any evidence connected with the disappearance of Sheila and Catherine Lyon. Scuba divers had searched this pond next to a nursing home a few blocks from Wheaton Plaza. Sewer drains were checked. Police asked for permission to search crawl spaces in nearby homes. On a tip from a psychic, National Guardsmen and police combed miles of parkland in Montgomery County. Nothing was found.
John and Mary, God bless them. They were out there for days and weeks with the search, still hoping against hope, because they knew whatever it was not good.
And as happens in all cases of missing children, Montgomery County Police investigated John and Mary Lyon.
One of the things you want to do very quickly is to be able to rule out anything other than, unfortunately, foul play.
Retired FBI profiler Clint Van Zandt.
We have to look at the parents in every case like that to see if there's a parental involvement, if there's anyone else nearby.
Police did quickly clear those who knew the Lyon sisters.
The leads dried up rather quickly because I don't think anybody had a good sighting of these two young girls beyond Wheaton Plaza that afternoon.
So as days turned into months, the only good lead was the description of tape recorder man.
If you have a sketch, if you have a description of a suspect, obviously that's what you're going to run with. But that has to be balanced. You know, if you go back to the D.C. sniper, we know we had a description of this white van, allegedly the shooters were in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. I mean, every white van in this area had been stopped and the occupants proned out on I-95. And of course, that turned out erroneous.
But did Montgomery County Police have any more to look into? Catherine and Sheila Lyon had just disappeared. There was no physical evidence to recover at Wheaton Plaza. Police had talked to everyone who saw the girls that day. Nobody had come forward to identify tape recorder man. John and Mary Lyon and their other children still had no answers. All they knew was that Sheila and Kate had never come home. Searches turned up nothing. And while Montgomery County Police vowed to find out what happened to the Lyon sisters, they admitted they were no further along in their investigation than the day the girls disappeared. But that was about to change. Next, on The Investigation Continues.
There was a gent locked up, convicted of child sex crimes down in North Carolina.
The Investigation Continues is an investigative podcast from WTOP. You can hear the entire five-part series at WTOP.com, search podcasts. You can also subscribe on iTunes and Podcast One. Thanks for listening. We'll see you here next week. I'm Neil Augenstein. Previously on The Investigation Continues.
We had these shopping malls. It was a place where teenagers would hang out.
These were two girls together, two sisters, who had just disappeared.
He was staring at them, and she said, you know, I knew there was something wrong with him, and I knew he was a creep.
A nice-looking, well-dressed, gray-haired gentleman appearing type of fellow.
Sheila and Catherine Lyon had walked from their home to Wheaton Plaza Mall during Easter vacation of 1975. They did some window shopping and had slices of pizza. They never returned home. The disappearance of the 12 and 10-year-old daughters of a popular local radio broadcaster terrorized the nation's capital and frustrated investigators who spent almost 40 years looking for answers. Later this year, a man goes on trial for the murders of the Lyon sisters, but their bodies still have never been found. I'm Neil Augenstein. This is The Investigation Continues, an investigative podcast from WTOP. We're looking at the disappearance of the Lyon sisters, a look at the clues that gave police hope and the opportunities that they missed, the long unsolved disappearance that changed the way people live. Almost 2 weeks after Sheila and Catherine Lyon disappeared from Wheaton Plaza in Montgomery County, Maryland, police got a solid lead. It happened here in Manassas, Virginia, at the intersection of Grant Avenue and Center Street. An IBM employee named Marshall Dietz was on his way to work that morning. He pulled up at the stoplight. A station wagon was to his left. In the back of the station wagon, he says he saw a little girl, blonde, with gold round metal glasses and blue eyes, bound and gagged. He told police he recognized her. It was 12-year-old Sheila Lyon. The witness told police the driver resembled the man shown in the police composite sketch. He said the car was a 1968 beige Ford station wagon with Maryland tags. The license plate was bent, so he could only see the first four letters and numbers. He tried to follow the car, but the driver realized it and sped away. Were the Lyon sisters still alive? That night, after the car description and partial plate were released, members of the public helped in the search for the Lyon girls. Truckers who heard the lookout on CB radio forced beige station wagons to the side of the road and did their own searches. Armed citizens in a car chased one station wagon near a campground at Burke Lake. But the girls weren't found that night, or the next day, or the next.
In my life, if there ever was a profile in courage, it was the fact that John came back to the radio.
Chris Corr and Tom Gager worked with John Lyon at WMAL.
At some point, he wanted to come back to work, and he did. And I think we all sort of held our breath wondering how on earth is he going to be able to do this, because the type of show that he did and the type of host that he was, easygoing, laid-back, comfortable guy who's just gone through hell.
We didn't talk about the girls. We did maintain an aura of distance, I guess.
The story seemed to stick around for decades. It would appear on the news from time to time. Maybe they would have a lead or maybe just report on the anniversary of the disappearance.
And it really frightened my mother. If we were shopping and she lost track of me, her panic was at a much higher level. She held us a lot closer after that. And for years, I just remember her saying, "I wonder whatever happened to those poor girls."
In the mid-80s, it became known. There was a gent locked up, convicted of child sex crimes down in North Carolina.
Reporter Gary Reels. In March of 1987, 12 years after Sheila and Kate Lyon disappeared, police got their most promising lead.
Fred Coffey had spent several years in the Navy, and he was in the early generation of computer wizardry. And he left the Navy early in 1975, and he moved to Montgomery County in March of 1975, where he took up a position with Vitro Labs there at Aspen Hill and George Avenue. At the time of the lion disappearance on March 25th, 75, Fred Coffey had just begun working, settling into his new position at Vitro Labs and his new life in Montgomery County.